The Sportsman's Nation is a 2% for conservation certified business. And on August 21st, you can join other conservationists all over the world in supporting Community Conservation Day. It's a day for anyone to give their time and or dollars back to their local ecosystems and favorite conservation causes. For more information on how you can participate, visit fishandwildlife.org.
Welcome, folks, to the Freshwater Bite podcast, your source for everything freshwater fishing. I'm your host, Lee Kleino, and on this podcast, you will hear from diehard anglers like yourself, the backstories of those anglers, techniques they use, gear reviews, and everything in between. So if you like fishing, turn it up, because this episode's about to kick off right now. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the podcast. What's been going on with you guys? Because hopefully you've been enjoying some time on the water. And, you know, there's a lot of tournaments kicking off this time of year in late spring. And it's kind of fitting for this episode because I'm joined by Ryan Petrovicus. Ryan and I were introduced through a mutual friend, Freddie Wickenizer, who was his tournament partner in their recent tournament they fished together on the Michigan Walleye Tour here out of Bowles Harbor in Michigan. And the reason why I wanted to have Ryan on the podcast is he kind of talks about his beginnings of kind of his mindset of what gave him the confidence to go into tournament fishing on a bigger stage, coming from this idea of growing up fishing on inland lakes, buying, you know, a 16-foot boat, how that led to buying, you know, a 20-foot Ranger down the road, and just like what happens to all of us with anything that we get really into or passionate about, you know, you either dive in, you go all in, or you just kind of half-ass it. And in order to be successful in this sport on this big of a stage, in order to continue to push yourself, you can't really half-ass anything. And, you know, Ryan talks about what he had to do, you know, getting a bigger boat, you know, starting a charter business to get more time on the water. Just that continuous push yourself to become better at whatever your craft is. And Ryan really talks about, you know, what he had to do and some adversity that him and Freddie faced during this tournament with high winds and stuff like that and how they fish. So just relax, enjoy this episode. And yeah, here's Ryan. All right, man. Well, hey, welcome to the podcast. You know, thanks for doing this, taking it out of your busy time. I really appreciate it. I thought it would be a great time to get you on the podcast because I think you and Freddie had an interesting story heading out into the second stop of the Michigan Walleye Tour, which seems to be gaining more and more popularity, kind of as like a, you know, a staple tournament here in the Midwest.
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely one of the, it's the biggest one in the state of Michigan for sure. The payouts are excellent. Just this past year, they kind of cleaned house and revamped the whole the event committee and board and everything like that. And they wanted this to be like one of the premier team tournaments and, you know, around. They want people from all over the country coming here for the Michigan Walleye Tour, which is kind of nice.
Why do you think that is? Just because, I mean, we've got such great fisheries around here and it just hasn't been promoted to the level that we all know it can be.
Yeah, I think, you know, just Michigan, you know, the Detroit River walleye run is, you know, there's people that come from all over the country, like my, you know, charters and stuff. People are coming from Nebraska and Indiana and all over just to come do the world famous Detroit River walleye run.
Right.
And then you got Lake Erie too, which is just insane, full of walleye, the record numbers of walleye right now in the system.
Right. And it's good to see the other stops on the tour as well, because I mean, everyone thinks of Lake Erie and the Detroit River obviously as being walleye meccas, but there's so many other great bodies of water from inland lakes up north, even to you know, like Bay du Nac and things like that, that a lot of people don't even know about.
Yeah, and I, you know, unfortunately, I'm not doing the whole tour this year. I just did the first two local ones, but I was really excited. You know, and any fisher, I like to challenge myself. So I enjoy going to new bodies of water and trying to dissect and figure out, you know, do they hang out in rocks over here? Do they hang out in weeds over here? You know, I haven't fished the Escanaba area. I haven't fished that. I really wanted to do that, but I have a normal, Monday through Friday job, and that doesn't really help, going up there. I would be a donator pre-fishing for 2 or 3 days. It's a lot of area to cover, especially for somebody that hasn't ever been up there. Then, Burt Mullet Lake too this year would be great. I've never fished up there, and I heard it's a really, really nice bite up there.
Yeah, when I was living up in Traverse City area, I'd go over it and fish Burt, a couple times, and more for on the ice. But I can vouch to say that walleye body of water is definitely becoming more and more of a popular name and a staple here in the state of Michigan. So, yeah, it's good to see the tour kind of getting around. And I agree. I think this should be one of those tours that a lot of people hopefully get more involved with and becomes as like we were talking about one of those flagships of the walleye tournaments in the Midwest region. But we're going to get into the nitty gritties of a lot of the things in your past tournament that you just completed here 2 weeks ago. But, always on the podcast, I always like to have people talk a little bit about themselves and kind of tell, who you are, where you're from, and, how you kind of got involved into where you're at now.
Yeah, well, I started, I grew up in Wyandotte up until 10th or till I was in fifth grade. And my uncle always had boats. And not even any nice, super nice, crazy boats. We just had boats and we went out and we just loved fishing. Our whole family rented cabins up on Houghton Lake for years, since before I was born. So I grew up fishing on that lake a week per year on that lake every single year for 20 something years. And, we just go out there. We had no electronics starting off. And even if we did have any type of electronics, we had just the, cheap electronics that showed a little fish swimming across your screen. Right. So,
right. just the fish icon.
we weren't really targeting species, right? We go out there, right. What are you fishing for? Oh, whatever's biting,
yep.
And, we started like that and I was hooked, no pun intended. I was hooked and I watching my uncle get a boat and, fishing off of that thing. We would drift crawler harnesses and drift Erie Deeries in Lake Erie and Breast Bay. Again, no electronics, no GPS, no nothing. And we would do pretty good. We would catch walleye. We didn't know why. We didn't know where they were. But we'd go out and catch walleye. And, from there, I graduated college and stuff. So I had a little bit of jingle in my pocket. And I went out and bought my very first boat, which was a 1990 Tracker Pro Guide 16 footer or something like that.
Nice.
Had a 40 horse Johnson. And that was the first boat I actually had electronics that worked where I can actually see hooks. That was back when we didn't even have color.
Oh boy. but just a step up from what you were used to, here starts that process of you figuring out why the fish are there and all that kind
right,
of stuff.
Right. Now I can see stuff. What are they? I'm not sure. Let's catch it and find out, And, then you just progress from there. And next thing, fast forward 5, 6, 7, 8 years later, and I'm doing the Michigan Walleye Tour and, run a charter business. And here we are, I think I'm on my fourth or fifth boat right now.
Yeah, how do you cycle through them? So, do you have your eye, set on a certain type, and you just kind of wanted to get to there, or talk about how you wanted to get to what you're into now?
Well, I'm not really a settler, right? So I always want to better myself and better my equipment, and once I had that tracker, I'm like, all right, well, this is nice for inland lakes, and then I had a boss that he had a 18-foot Tracker Targa 18 with the walkthrough windshield. And I always told him when I worked for him, I was like, whenever you sell that, let me know. This will be the greatest boat ever. This will be the last boat I ever buy. And I think I've said that 3 times so far. and he said, oh, I'm selling it. I said, all right, perfect. I sold my boat and bought that one. And once I bought that one, I was like, all right, well, I can handle bigger bodies of water. I can go out and learn newer bodies of water. I had a way better bow mount trolling motor. My last one, you could barely keep vertical in the Detroit River. And, I was just taking that boat out there fishing Houghton Lake. And really there was a turning point that went from me being fun fishing to, okay, let's get into the competition. And the turning point, you know, like many stories start, is I met a guy at the bar. We're sitting there, you know, I think it was hunting season, and my buddy, we just got done planting some food plots, and my buddy and I went to the bar in Houghton Lake, and we were talking walleye, and the guy heard us talking about walleye, and he's like, oh, you should get in the Michigan Walleye Tour. You know, I told him what kind of boat I had. He's like, oh, that'll be plenty for this and plenty for that. His name's Mike. He'll probably be listening to this at one point in time, but ever since I met him, it's been, I hopped right onto the tournament trail and kind of hopped on his coattails, learned a lot about from him and many of the other guys on the tour, and learned that the aluminum tracker boat's probably not the best boat to do an entire Michigan walleye tour on the big bodies of water. So then I had to upgrade. So 4 years after I bought that 18-foot tracker, I bought a Ranger 621. And then 4 years after that, I bought another 621, which brings us to the present day.
Kind of getting back to meeting that guy, Mike, in the bar, and then going to your first tournament, him giving you that encouragement to get on to do that. Was that intimidating at all, going into a bigger tournament like that?
It was very intimidating based on the numbers of boats, first of all. And then at the same time, I didn't know him very well at that time.
Yeah.
I knew him for a couple of months, so I didn't know if he was just being like, oh, well, another donator, right? Get somebody in there that can...
Explain to folks what a donator is.
A donator is going to be somebody that enters a tournament that kind of doesn't have a chance.
I would be a donator.
Like, I don't... There's some types of... I mean, I'm sure, like, just for example, this last Lake Erie tournament, I mean, there are 4 or 5 footers for 2 days straight. A lot of the boats that entered it probably unintentionally became donators because they could not run to make, you know, they could not go find the fish. They were kind of stuck right out front in Michigan waters.
Yeah. But, and that's with like anything that you get into, right? Whether that be any kind of competition sport, it's like, how far do you want to take it, right? I mean, that point right there, like you said, it kind of separates those who can get on the bigger fish and those who have to settle for, a lot smaller playing field than what you guys are able to go out and, you know, confidently do based on your equipment.
Right. Like, I mean, for the Michigan Walleye Tour, the only rule was, obviously we can't fish Canada right now, but your only rule was you can't refuel. So some guys have a 16-gallon tank, some guys have a 60-gallon tank.
Right.
So you're limited to where your boat can take you.
Yeah.
Regardless of the waves, right?
Right. So you get, you start to cut your teeth in on the bigger tournament. Was your first tournament with the Ranger or was it with your tracker?
No, first one was with the tracker.
Okay.
And it was, I want to say there was 120 boats, 125 boats, and I think we finished top 30.
On your first one?
36 or something like that.
Oh, dang,
yeah,
dude, that's pretty good.
If I remember correctly, we were in the top third and we were really surprised. We had, you know, a 12-volt trolling motor, and I remember we did pretty good on day one. I don't remember what place we were in on day one, but on day two, the wind came out of the south right up the Detroit River, and I don't know if you're too familiar with the south wind on the river, but down by Groseal and Celeron Island and stuff like that, it was kicking up some pretty 4 or 5 foot waves, and you know, a little 18-foot boat, aluminum boat that sits on top of the water as opposed to a glass boat that sits in the water is getting blown around. And if I remember correctly, we ran out of battery juice. We only had one battery, right, on a 12-volt system. We ran out of battery juice. I think we came in early at around 1 o'clock. I don't even remember how many fish we had. Maybe we had 5. I don't know. But yeah, for, you know, our little debut, to finish top 30 in the conditions and just be in the first big tournament I've ever been in, it was pretty exciting.
So that had to give you a confidence boost going into the next event, or at least trying to say like, hey, I can do this?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I don't know. You're always your worst critic, right? So I'm always super hard on myself. I mean, even any tournament I go into, when I come into weigh-in, I'm like, yeah, well, there's other guys out there that are probably 30 pounds more than us, you know?
Sure.
But then usually, typically, when I keep that attitude, typically when I show up to the scales, we have a pretty respectable finish every time.
How has that changed your attitude towards walleye fishing just in general? Just how you approach a body of water or when you go out? I mean, a lot of it obviously is catching fish, but it's also catching the right fish at the right time in the tournament. You know what I mean? Like, you know, your morning bite's going to be a lot different than your 10 o'clock a.m. morning bite is going to be different than your early afternoon bite. So that's when you kind of get into the strategy of, you know, tournament walleye fishing. How long did it kind of take you to be on that more strategic side of, you know, things of when to catch the right fish?
In my opinion, I still don't think I'm the most strategic. I am not the best at the whole scientific and migratory and this and this and this. A lot of my stuff, I just try to do on instinct. I let my electronics and I let the fish tell me what's going on.
Okay.
I'm not one of those guys that say, oh, this time last year we were fishing here and we were landing a bunch of 10 pounders.
Okay.
I'll go check that spot, but I let my electronics and just, I don't know if it's instinct or what. I just let that kind of lead me and drive until I find fish. And when I find fish, then we fish.
So you're not one of those guys that fishes off of memories, honey holes, things like that. You're always constantly moving. If there aren't fish, you move on to the next spot.
Yep. I'm always moving. If we don't catch a fish, well, tournament's a little different, but I would say in charters, if we don't get a fish within 20 minutes or so, it's on to the next spot. I don't ever put any of my gear in the water unless my graph is showing some hooks.
How did you get into the chartering business?
Well, I guess the biggest thing would be being a donator in the tournaments. You know, you're spending all this money, you know, taking all the time off of work to go to the hotels and try to pre-fish and try to do have a respectable finish, try to finish in the money. Like my goal is always to, you know, break even for the weekend.
Sure.
So I consider myself still pretty new. I've been doing the Michigan Walleye Tour for maybe 5 years, 6 years. And, going to these new bodies of water, the ones that I'm not comfortable in, like, for example, Saginaw Bay. Can I go out there and catch fish in Saginaw Bay? Yeah. But can I go out there and put a tournament together without pre-fishing for probably a week straight? I would say no.
Okay.
And there's a lot of good fishermen out there that know where all these rock piles are and know where big fish hang out. So, I don't remember the question. What was the question?
No, you're doing good. So yeah, just like how the chart, how did you got in, into
oh, how
the
did I get chartering? In chartering? Yeah, sorry. So just kind of came, well, I can catch fish. I can put some people on fish. Why not, you know, bring in some money every time I take the boat out instead of pay money every time I take the boat out. That was kind of my black and white thought behind the whole thing. You know, take the boat out, get paid to do what I like to do. And I grew up coaching like hockey and everything, and I love teaching people.
Okay.
So the chartering thing is actually a lot more rewarding to me than the tournaments. Tournaments, I love the competition, the camaraderie and all that other stuff. The chartering thing is for me to like give back to people and say, hey, this is how you do this and this is how you do this, and you know, teaching people why we're fishing here, you know, what this means on the screen, and like that's what I like more out of it. I consider myself pretty fortunate to, you know, be able to have the type of boat that I have and have the equipment that we have, and I just like sharing that with other people.
Yeah, I think, that's an important, you know, in my opinion, I think it's what keeps people like you engaged in the sport. And, you know, it kind of changes it up between, you know, teaching people and at the same time, then, you know, giving into your competitive side where you're like, you know, I'm learning while I'm making money, but I'm also like taking that knowledge and figuring out how to apply it to my competitive side. I think you've got a good balance there. And I think a lot of people, again, another intimidating thing is chartering. A lot of people feel that pressure of, you know, wow, I don't know if I can put people on fish every day. And if they weren't to catch a fish, what would that mean to me? You know what I mean? Like, that's a lot of pressure too. But if you're teaching at the same time, I think that time on the boat would be a lot more valuable to that customer rather than just nonstop catching fish all the time.
Yeah, that definitely worries me. I've had, you know, and I'm sure any charter captain out there would speak and say, we've had those days, right? You've sure. had those days where you know, it's wildlife. You can't guarantee that, you know, four limits of fish are going to hop in the boat. Mm-hmm. You know, some days there's good days, some days there's bad days. And that definitely is in the back of my mind. When I very first started chartering, I would freak out if we didn't have a limit in, you know, in the morning.
Right.
And it, you know, my mind was still in that tournament mentality.
Right.
Right. So I have to switch mentally to, you know what, these guys are out here having a good time. They won't, you know, getting away from the work, getting away from the house or whatever they're doing. And, you know, they don't care. Some guys don't care if they catch five fish, one fish, zero fish. They're just out having a good time. And that's one thing that I've learned throughout this year, is just to switch my mindset that these guys are having fun, whether we catch fish or not. I mean, obviously I would love to put, you know, tons of limits on the boats every single day, but that's just not reality.
Sure. Well, I think it's cool when if you think about it this way, people are spending their fun free time in your boat. So it's like everybody's already happy to be there because they're not at work, like you said, or they're not at home having the, you know, whatever it is, if there's chores or things lined up, they're spending their free time away from work and away from their families or with their families on the water. So I think like that mindset, everybody's already stoked just to be out there.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, you know, when some people that show up to the chart, to the launch, and they see the boat that I have and many other guys have, you know, I didn't know they made motors that big. You know, I have a 300 horsepower. I didn't know. Oh my gosh, look at the size of that. You know, I'm very fortunate to have this kind of like inside view of kind of the walleye world and fishing world, you know, that I take for granted. And that's what a lot of the charters do to me. It brings me back down to earth. Like, hey, there's these guys that just love being out here and love fishing. And, you know, sometimes if we catch a species that's not on the target list, they love it just as much too.
Sure. You know? And you're learning at the same time. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, time on the water is, you know, that's what they always talk about. How do you catch more fish? More and more time on the water.
Yep. Practice makes perfect.
Yeah. So how'd you get linked up with our buddy Freddie?
I got linked up by Fred. My cousin's husband went to school with Fred.
Okay.
Went to high school with Fred. Did you go to high school with Fred?
Yeah. That's how I know Freddie. We played football together.
Joel Bonk?
Yep. Yes, sir.
Joel Bonk is my cousin's husband.
Okay. So you meet this other walleye nut, Freddie, down here in the South County. And you guys decided this year to go in on Erie together for stop number two. Or did he fish stop number one with you too, or just stop number two?
No, just two.
Okay.
Just two. I did the first stop with my other buddy.
Okay. So kind of describe going into this tournament, what the walleye are doing and what the weather's like. So this was what, the first week of May or last week of April?
Yep. First week of May, May 1st and 2nd, I believe.
Okay. So, you know, for everybody listening out there, everyone knows the famous walleye run, you know, typically starts in the month of April. You know, the head-to-head fishing tournament was in April. You have the first stop of the Michigan Walleye Tour in April. So now that a second stop is basically Lake Erie. So kind of describe what the fish are doing this time of year and, you know, what it was like going into the tournament the week prior, and then leading up to launch day.
Well, it's funny, because this year is a weird year as far as fish go. I think, in my opinion, again, I'm not a marine biologist or anything like that, but in my opinion, the migration and everything was early this year due to we had record temperatures in March and April.
Yep.
It was really warm in March and April. The water temperature just went from, you know, 38 degrees to 48 degrees almost in a week.
Yeah.
So in my opinion, those fish went up to the river, did their thing, and they were out before people kind of knew what was going on.
I think everybody was still going for those big fish out on the big bodies of water. And like you said, it jumped so fast that I don't think anybody even thought about running up the river.
Right. Like right now, I haven't been on the river since the Michigan Walleye Tour in April, but right now they're catching fish in the river hand over fist right now.
Right.
But yeah, I spend most of my time on Erie anyway. But I knew at this time of the year, you know, the fish are on their way back out of the river, even on a normal year, they'd be on their way back out of the river and, you know, they've already done their deed and start heading east into the deeper water. So we knew we had to get them between, you know, between the river and however far our boat can take us in the second walleye tour there. But
what were water temps that week when you guys were fishing?
Water temps were in the high 40s.
Okay.
And mid low 50s. We found some cooler spots in certain areas, and yeah, there were, I think we ranged from like 52 down to 48 was pretty much the range that I remember.
Okay. And the weather, talk about the weather that week of when you guys were fishing.
So the weather, our plan was we were going to pre-fish 3 days. We were going to pre-fish Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And we talked about, you know, Wednesday was looking like the nicest day. And we talked about, you know, between Freddie and I, we fished Erie quite a bit in Michigan water. So I think we had a pretty good idea of, you know, what was happening in the Michigan portion. And, you know, Michigan doesn't have a whole lot of Lake Erie. It's still a ton and ton of water, but nothing compared to Ohio, right? So
yep.
We fished Wednesday in Michigan, and we just checked a bunch of spots that we didn't really normally fish. And we caught fish all day there. And then Thursday, we went out and the wind was supposed to be blowing northeast, out of the northeast up to like 20 to 30 miles an hour. And we were out. We stayed in a hotel in Port Clinton. Actually, Freddie drove back and forth from Monroe. Oh. So I stayed in Port Clinton. And, you know, we woke up in the morning on Thursday morning, and, you know, all my other friends that were there, other guys, tournament guys, there's no way we're going. There's no way. There's going to be 8-footers, 10-footers out there, blah, 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 blah. And Thursday we went out. It was pretty rough. It was threes, maybe the occasional fours. Pretty rough, but it was fishable. And, you know, this whole Michigan Walleye Tour tournament stuff, it's not for the weak, man. You gotta go out there and put in the effort. I know that from tournaments prior. You know, I wouldn't, if it was raining, I wouldn't go pre-fish, or if it was blowing, you know, over 15 miles an hour, I wouldn't go pre-fish. It was just me being lazy. And
okay,
lately I haven't been as lazy. So
where does that come from? Does that come from the confidence within your boat now that you're driving a glass, or are you just, or is that more of a mental thing where you're like, if I don't put myself in this uncomfortable situation, I'm never going to be up on that leaderboard?
The boat, the confidence in the boat and the electronics is huge for sure. But just not, you know, fishing for four or five years, not cashing checks or not being in the top 10 or not doing this is just, you know, something's missing. I'm doing something wrong last year, right? Or 2 years ago, sure. Or 3 years ago. So this year I was just like, I'm going to try. You can't quit. You can't just say, oh no, I can't do that. Or, you know, just go for it. what, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen? It's going to be cold and windy and, you know, maybe some rain. You're going to get wet. Whoop-de-doo. We all have rain gear, you know, just do it. That's kind of been my philosophy this year, is just go for it.
And obviously you found like that's what, obviously A, gives you the confidence, but B, separates those who can finish on that top third or cash a check and those who can't.
Yeah, I would say so. I got a bunch of friends on that are on the tour that they fish in some pretty crazy weather. I've been on a team with a guy that, I mean, it didn't matter. We were fishing.
Right.
It's just, we're going. We have to go. We're in this tournament. Like, we have to go. You know, there's a lot of guys that, you know, you got to go in with the mentality. We're going in it for 10 grand per tournament. Plus, you know, Saginaw tournament this year is 25 grand. So you're not going in it for, you know, $1,500. Like, you're in it to win it. Right. So you got to put in the effort.
Well, here's the other thing too. There's a lot of people on this tour that know Erie very well. And there's also some bigger names that people know very well. And you know, the reason why they're successful is because they are going out in this, these weather conditions, and they are putting in, you know, 110%, you know, they don't become recognizable or they don't cash that many checks over the year by playing it safe or sitting on the sidelines, you know, waiting for the perfect fishing conditions.
Yeah. It's like, it's just, you know, equate it to any other sport. You don't leave anything left on the field, right?
Right.
I mean, the only difference is we're sitting in boats and not skating around a rink or dribbling a basketball up and down the court.
So I've got actually got a question just from the outside is, you know, you said you had a decent day of fishing on Wednesday of decent weather. Obviously, the weather progressed to worse and worse as the week went on, leading to Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. By tournament day, you guys were fishing in four footers, like you had mentioned. How did that change your style of fishing?
It really didn't.
Really? Okay.
It didn't. And that's, you know, if you talk to Freddie, that's one of my other things is, on the turn doing tournaments, you can't be wishy-washy with your decisions. If you make a decision, you have to commit.
Okay.
You know, like for example, we ran into this one time where we weren't marking any fish for a while pre-fishing, and, we're like, all right, let's bring the lines in. We start bringing the lines in, and all of a sudden our graph was just full of fish. And he was like, well, what about, you know, should we just leave them in? I said, nope, we got to commit. Just stuff like that. You know, it's got to commit.
Can't second guess yourself.
Right. We had our plan on tournament day, and we knew it was going to be rough. We had the equipment to pull it off. And we had our plan. We had what we were going to do. And we said, well, this is it. This is all we knew. This is all we learned based on pre-fishing. And, we went with it, and it paid off.
So when you guys were pulling your lines, you know, did you ever have to think like, or did you put into your plan different methods of fishing, like trolling versus, I don't know if you guys were just drifting at one point with, I mean, talk a little bit about, you don't have to give like specific, you know, colors of baits or anything like that, but were you guys pulling cranks? Were you guys pitching a jig anywhere on a reef or anything like that?
Yeah, no, we trolled cranks the entire time.
Okay.
We pre-fished for a little while with crawlers just because of the time of year and the water temperature. With being pretty far up there, we figured, yeah, we thought maybe one would outperform the other, and it was kind of neck and neck. And actually, cranks for us outfished the crawler harnesses. But as far as colors and stuff like that, I mean, for 4 days straight, we used roughly the same kind of colors.
Same program that you guys have been running all week.
Yeah, we just changed a couple locations, and that was it.
When that wind picked up, how did the fish react? I mean, if you were to describe to it like on the graph, did it stay the same when you were out there fishing Wednesday? Did you find yourself saying, wow, the wind has got the bait pushed around here, maybe more lower in the water column, or the fish hitting up? Like, kind of, I mean, was there anything that you noticed when the weather shifted that dramatically?
Well, Wednesday was nice and calm. So it was just a typical kind of like typical Michigan day for us.
Yeah.
So we didn't really learn a whole lot on Wednesday fishing Michigan waters, but on Thursday and Friday, we did. We learned a lot. You know, I believe was it Friday morning? It was, you know, twos to threes, maybe occasional four here or there, but we were able to keep a slow troll down. And then as the day went on, the boat wouldn't go slower than 2 miles an hour. So we were stuck fishing faster than we wanted to. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, and then as the day goes on, yeah, you hear this from a lot of people, and this is, I really didn't believe this until this last tournament. Cause I've never seen it, but during tournament days, I actually saw is the fish swim into the wind. The bait swims into the wind, the fish swim into the wind.
Okay.
And, we noticed on tournament day that where we fished our first couple passes to where we ended up was farther into the wind almost every single pass. It was pretty surreal to see that.
Wow. That's what I wanted to kind of like figure out what was going on out there and kind of, you know, get your opinion, because I think a lot of people, when you guys are faced with that kind of, you know, adversity out there from day to day in, you know, you're the, like you just were describing, you don't really fish the same way on Wednesday as you do when that wind picks up. So I was kind of seeing how you guys would adapt to that and what patterns that you would notice, because I think a lot of people need to figure that out, or, you know, need to realize like, hey, take a breath. Yeah, it's windy out here, but how are those fish going to be reacting differently?
I mean, in those types of winds, I think the only thing you can really do is troll. I mean, unless you want to wear your batteries down and spot lock and try to cast or jig. We did see some, you know, some charters out there jigging, but they had a lot bigger boats and a lot better means of staying still than we did. And then, you know, with trolling, you're covering more ground. So you're able to get a bigger, wider view of what kind of fish are down there, as opposed to staying in one spot.
What advice would you give to someone, whether it's with equipment, safety equipment, you know, tips or techniques when it comes to fishing in high winds like that? Is there something that you relied on more? Is there something, you know what I mean? Like what advice would you give? Like, hey, if you're going out in high winds, I'd try this, or I'd make sure you have this in the boat.
I would say for one, and I learned this on my first two aluminum boats, is your first thing is, if you know, Lake Erie can turn on you in a second, and if the boat says it'll take 175 horsepower, don't put the 90 horse on it. Put at least something close to the 175 horsepower. Like, that helps you big time get the boat out of its own way in waves like that. That would be probably one of the most important things. I tell everybody that's looking for a new boat or buying a new boat, you know, some people are, well, you know, going from this horsepower to that horsepower costs an extra $1,200. And like, I would just max out the horsepower, because you can never have too much, especially in, you know, regardless of what kind of boat you have. Just, you got to have that power to get out of the way or get up on top of the wave or get down into the troughs of the waves or something like that. Like, I think having the power, the max power that the boat is rated for, I think is one of the most important ones.
Yeah, that's it. You're right. And that's something that a lot of people always, you know, might skimp on, where they're saying, well, I had a 90 horsepower on my last boat, or I had 150 on my last boat and it worked just fine. But, you know, a lot of the times when they give out their specs or people are giving their reviews on the performance, a lot of the times they have that heavier motor on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, when I was, you know, your typical weekend fun fishing guy, my 18 footer had a 115 on it. And I was like, heck, it does 42 miles an hour. I'll never need to go faster than this. I'll never need more power than this. I'll never need a bigger boat than this. And then
until you
tournament, I don't think every single person needs to have a Ranger.
Sure.
But if you want to compete and make the playing field as level as possible, I would say a big glass boat with a high horsepower engine is pretty much baseline for most of the competition.
Yeah. So, you know, as we were talking about, the tournament got worse basically, right? Wind-wise, as you guys were progressing. Talk about day one, where you guys finished, and going into day two.
Yeah, day one, the wind kind of switched, so it laid down for the morning. We knew we were going to be able to get out to where we wanted to go. We had a 30-mile run right off the get-go, and we said, well, we'd fish out there, and hopefully our fish are still there. And so we were able to go wide open throttle all the way out to our first spot, which was out by the islands. Mm-hmm. And probably around noon, it started getting worse. And then we had another spot that was closer in, you know, another 10 or 12 miles west of there. So we, you know, our first spot was kind of a bust. We got our five fish, but they weren't the pre-fish that we were catching. And then we went to another spot that we pre-fished on Thursday, and we ended up finishing it out there. We figured, all right, well, we got our five at spot A. You know, we knew there was fish there at our first spot. And, you know, you don't leave the old rule. You don't leave fish to find fish, right?
Right.
So we didn't move from that first spot until we got our limit. And, you know, for me, being in a tournament, like, priority number one is get five fish. Come to the scales with five fish. So once we get that five fish out of the way, then it's huge relief off my shoulders and Freddie's shoulders. And then we go.
Then you upgrade.
Then we go upgrade for the rest of the day.
Sure.
And I think we did it pretty well. We, you know, made our far run on day one. And about halfway through the day, we made it, you know, another 10, 12 miles closer to Monroe, Bulls Harbor. And we finished out the day there. And what time do we have to be in? We had to be in at 3:30. And I think we gave ourselves an hour to get back. We were 17 miles away. We gave ourselves an hour to get back in four plus footers. And it was like a southwest wind, west wind. So we're heading right into the waves.
I was going to say, you're going right back to where you need to get to, into the wind.
Yeah, for 17 miles.
How'd that feel?
It wasn't bad. I don't like to beat my boat up very much. You know, cause I can't run charters if I have a broken boat. So I don't beat it up too bad. I also have air suspension seats that are worth their weight in gold. I would recommend anybody that.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you're getting on the big bodies of water and you're buying this big boat. I mean, I think those airwave seats, and, you know, they're a must. You got to have them, especially if you're going to be running as far as you guys did.
Yeah. And I've heard stories, you know, in past tournaments, people breaking their backs, and, you know, there was a couple injuries on day one, from pretty much the same thing. I don't know if the guy had air suspension seats or not, but, he didn't end up fishing day two. So, you know, if that's more of a, maybe a safety, I guess more of a safety thing in my, that's how I view it, is more of a safety thing than anything. I don't like to get injured. I don't like to injure anybody.
Well, just longevity of fishing. Like, how long do you want to do this for? If you're not going to spend the money, it's either you're going to pay now or pay later, you know?
Right. Right. And, yeah, they definitely help. I wouldn't say you have to have them, but I will say every single boat that I own will have them.
Yep. So you guys run back in day one. What'd you guys weigh in at day one? And where'd you
ran back in day one. I think we did 24 pounds, 11 ounces. And that was after day one. We were sitting in 12th place.
Out of how many boats?
Out of 85.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. And, you know, with it being Erie, Fred and I talked on the way in, you know, with 24 pounds, we were like, yeah, well, we're going to be in the middle of the pack. You know, our whole goal from the get go was, to give us a shot on day two. Like, you can't win a tournament on day one, but you can dang near lose a tournament on day one.
Yeah.
So we're really happy when we came in, and they were like, oh yeah, you're 12th place after day one. I'm like, holy moly. Cause there was like, MWC, I believe, was out there. There was a couple tournaments a weekend prior, and then a couple weekends prior to that, where they were pulling, you know, 44 pounds and, I think the MWC, I believe, was like 36 pounds a day was pulling, getting pulled.
Okay.
So we figured 24 pounds would be middle of the pack. But, you know, just that, I don't know, that the attitude that I have is, you know, just we gave it our best and came in and it paid off. I always think we're way worse than we actually are for some reason.
Well, it's better to be pleasantly surprised, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. Maybe, like, you know, keep your expectations low.
Sure.
You know, keep your expectations low. So it feels a lot better when you get in there.
What did you see a lot of people weigh in? Like, obviously you guys were in the top 12, but why do you think, like, what do you think separated you guys from, you know, the bottom 2/3 of the field?
I think location would have been one of them. And that day, or that whole weekend, there's a spot in Michigan that holds big fish.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all year round. It holds good fish. It's the spot that I take a lot of my charters to. And all those places were just mud, and you couldn't see 6 inches into the water.
Wow.
So because it was a northeast wind from Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, if I'm not mistaken. So it was just beating up that eastern shoreline of Michigan, and next thing you know, it's just chocolate milk. So there wasn't a whole lot of fishable areas in Michigan, and for the people that had the smaller boats or didn't want to beat up their boat or anything like that, they were kind of stuck pretty tight. And Michigan, during our pre-fishing, Michigan was either chocolate milk or crystal clear. There wasn't a whole lot of areas that were that kind of stained water that you look for a good walleye bite.
Right. And then, so you guys finished 12th top, or day one. I was remember texting Freddie. He was pretty stoked about it, and I thought that was great. And then I was like waking up day two, and I seen how windy it was getting, and I was like, wow, I can't imagine being out on Erie in Sunday, because Sunday got even windier.
Yeah, it didn't stop from Saturday afternoon through the night. I remember waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning or something, and you know, I could just hear the wind howling in the middle of the night. And
yeah, how's that feeling?
It's, you know, I was dreading it. I was really, really dreading it.
Thank you for being honest, because I'd have been like, fuck. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't want to go. You know, there was some talks about, oh, well, if there's a small craft advisory, they're going to cancel day two.
Uh-huh.
Which I was like, okay, fine. I'm in the money. They paid down to, you know, 16th or 18th place, I believe. I was like, well, I'm in the money. That's fine. Whatever. You know, we'll get $800.
Yeah.
And only fish one day and not have to beat the crap out of ourselves. But then at the same time, this current boat that I have, I just bought last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, Ranger's newer hull style and everything. And this was the roughest water I've ever had the boat in. And I guess I was reminiscing of when I had my last Ranger with the slightly inferior hull, that if I was in these 4-footers all day, 3, 4, 5 footers all day, I would have got my butt kicked. But, you know, when we had got out there on Saturday, it was fine. It was, you know, and that comes with seat time too. And like knowing your boat, knowing how to trim and throttle and how to quarter the waves and trough them, you know, and, it was actually great, and I'm glad we fished. I was dreading it the night before, and Freddie was like, man, I hope we fish. I'm like, dude, no, you don't. You know? and naive. You know, by the time I woke up in the morning, I was like, you know what? It's going to be a good day. Like, we're going to do it. We're going to go out there and fish. It's not going to be that bad. Because it couldn't have been much worse than what Saturday was on the way coming in Saturday afternoon.
So how did you guys game plan going out on day two? So you're, I mean, obviously the water's rougher, so you didn't go out to your 30-mile spot.
Correct.
Okay. So, you know, to stay in that top, you know, I think going into day two already, like you said, like you're already starting to separate and divide that 85 boat entry by a lot. Like, in my opinion, I feel like that's when like that wind is really starting to separate the pack of boats. And now you're kind of just fishing with a smaller niche group of boats that you have to compete and beat.
Yeah. And there were some guys, you know, Facebook's kind of neat because you can see some of the guys that post like their day one recap. You know, there was a team that split the keel of their boat. There was another team that lost his whole kicker, came right out of the transom, you know, and that's the price you pay for, you know,
that's eerie.
That's eerie. And that's, you know, it's, some of them could be glass boats. Some, yo, that's another thing. Somebody like lost a windshield, you know, it's one of those things. So yeah, I figured, I said, well, anybody that's in the money or in the hunt is going to sacrifice, you know, more pounding on the boat and all that other stuff. And that's what I told Fred going into it. I said, we have no choice but to go back there.
Right.
We have no choice. We know there's good fish out there. We have no choice but to go.
So you make it out, you get your five, you guys are heading back in day two. How did day two compare to day one weight wise?
We had scales on the boat, so we knew we were coming in with right around the same. And okay, to be consistent 2 days in a row for me is a big deal.
Okay.
Like, I like that. I don't want to drop down. You would like to improve. So we thought we were coming in around the same. We're trying to weigh the fish in, you know, ridiculous waves. So the scale was fluctuating a little bit. But when we did get in, I think the weight was a little over a half pound more than what we saw on our scales.
Okay.
Which was good. You know, we thought we had high 24s and we saw 25, I think it was 25.6, 25.5, okay. 25.55. And we were like, oh, this is nice. And, you know, we were one of the, I think we were the second flight in. They did the weights in four flights. We were the second flight in. And when we weighed in, we were sitting in fifth place. And we were sitting in fifth place for quite a while. And then the Michigan Walleye Tour, what they do this year, which is kind of neat and new, is the guys that were in top 10 that after day one, they weigh, those are the last guys to weigh in.
Oh, cool.
So we were sitting, I think we were sitting in like sixth or seventh place before the top 10 guys came in. And a couple of those top 10 guys did the same, and some of the top 10 guys didn't do as good. So we actually went up from 12th place to 9th place.
And you guys finished in 9th?
Yep.
Dude, that's awesome. Congratulations. Yeah. That's badass.
Thank you. Yeah.
How'd you feel?
I felt great. That's my first top 10 finish in the Michigan Walleye Tour.
Hell yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of, you got the best anglers in the state. And again, you got guys from out of state too coming in to do this stuff. It's stiff competition.
Sure.
It really is.
Well, think of all the Ohio guys and gals too coming up.
Yeah.
You know, that's their body of water too. No matter what side they're fishing from, all they got to do is get back to where they're comfortable. And they, in this case, it was a rough drive over to there, but
there's
the Ohio waters.
I don't know how many people from Ohio are actually in it. I saw some chatter on social media about some people that, you know, were interested in getting into it. And some pretty well-known people as well. I don't think they actually got into it. But
that's cool, man. That, you know, if you just kind of recap of where you started into where you're at now, you know, starting in just like a 16-foot boat, like you had talked about, going into a guide business, going into glass, you know, 621s or whatever, you know, Ranger you have, and then, you know, landing a top 10 to finish in your home state on your home body of water for the most part. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, they always tell you your home body of water is the hardest to win on because you fish, you're stuck fishing memories, So, and then it's probably kind of why we resorted to doing the farther run, because the amount of hours Freddie and I spend in Michigan waters, I think we would have got our clock cleaned if we would have stayed in Michigan.
So you got a top 10 finish, and I know, knowing, like you said, bettering yourself and just wanting to compete, how did that top 10 finish, or what has it done as you look into your future competitions? Like, what was that drive, or what's that next goal that you have set?
As of right now, it just pretty much said I can play ball.
Gotcha.
Right. You know, our last two tournaments, actually our last two Michigan Walleye Tours, the Detroit River one, we missed the money by 0.22 of a pound, less than a quarter of a pound.
Okay.
And then this one, yeah, coming in top 10 was pretty nice. And it just further instilled my theories of giving it a shot. You know, fish when it's going to rain, fish when it's going to blow like crazy, as long as it's safe, right?
Right, yeah. Within reason. Don't be insane.
Right. Don't go out there in a 16-footer and, you know, risk it. But when it comes down to that, just don't be lazy to pre-fish. That's my biggest takeaway from the entire thing this year so far, is just you got to try.
Gotcha. Well, that's great, man. And now you get to, you said you're not fishing any of the other events?
No, I would love to, but like I said, there's, family commitments, and that's a lot of time off of,
work,
a lot of time off of work, a lot of time away from the family.
Yeah.
And,
I hear you,
man. We kind of had a deal where I would just kind of stick around and do the local ones. So, and you know, maybe if I wasn't chartering, I'd probably be able to do more, but doing the charters on the weekends and the tournaments on the weekends, it's a lot.
What's the name of your charter so everybody knows?
It's Full Throttle Sport Fishing.
I like it.
Yeah.
That's dope. And,
I'm, like I said, mostly out of Erie, Detroit River, do Saginaw Bay, Lake St. Clair as well.
How's your schedule filling up?
Surprisingly, this year it's been crazy. I'm from April, I was booked all the way out till mid June.
That's awesome.
And I pretty much stopped putting out open dates right now, just to let everything settle down. And, you know, I know I got summer coming up, and, you know, they want to do some camping stuff with the family. So I gotta do that little balance, but, I'm, you know, mainly a weekend guy.
Okay.
Just because I have a normal job as well.
Sure.
But during big runs, you know, big walleye runs, I will take time off. And, you know, if they have the Ohio Fall Brawl in November and December, I'll probably take a week off and charter out of Ohio for that week to get into the Fall Brawl. And, you know, the Detroit River run, I've had a whole week off for that, but the week that I had off leading up to the Michigan Walleye Tour it didn't pan out. So I just went back to work.
Yeah.
I said, well, I'll show up.
Well, man, I don't know what you did, but you shook something crazy into Freddie. He sold his boat and, you know, just as I think he's going to upgrade to something of your caliber. And, so whatever happened during the storm or whatever you guys did out there, it shook him crazy and inspired him to take his next step. So that was kind of cool to see.
Yeah, I kind of did that on purpose.
Did
you? I know he's going to listen to this too. So we were out there when we were pre-fishing. I just sat in the passenger seat. He drove my boat all day long on Wednesday. He drove it a little bit on Thursday in the rough water. I just let him drive it. He didn't drive it during the tournament, but I let him drive it, and then during the tournament, we got on shore, and he was like, man, he said, nothing rides like that.
Nope.
Like, nope. I said, it's definitely, and like I said, I don't think everybody needs one, but if you're going to compete in some big time stuff, that's kind of a minimum. That's kind of a baseline. And, you know, he was saying, he was looking at different boats. He was looking at aluminums and stuff like that. And he kept telling me, the glass isn't all it's cracked up to be, Ryan. Glass isn't all it's cracked up to be. 4 days in a glass boat changed his mind.
Ah. Well, that's cool, man. Hey, we'll have to have you back on too, because I know you do a lot of your own rigging on your boats and things like that. And I think we could develop a nice little podcast to help some folks, especially if buying a fiberglass boat. I would imagine that's intimidating as hell to drill into. So I think to have you back on in the future, if you're up for it, would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. That's definitely one of my other side hobbies is, you know, the electronic side and the rigging and everything. I'm a nerd when it comes to Lowrance and electronics. So
awesome.
I help a lot of guys out, help a lot of my buddies out that are on the Michigan Walleye Tour, and you know, rewired a bunch of guys' boats and re-rigged a bunch of theirs and teach them how to use their electronics. And actually, one of the boats, they finished second place.
Oh, great. Well, I'm glad I know you now, because if I ever get one in the future, you're going to be one of my first calls I make.
No problem. I got no problem. Like I said, I'm a coach, man. I have no problem helping people out.
Well, I appreciate it. So give every folks, you know, your handles on social and where they can go to maybe sign up for a charter with you.
Yeah, on Facebook, it's facebook.com/full-throttle-sport-fishing-charters. And on Instagram is full_throttle_sport-fishing. My contact information, phone number, and everything is in there. You can shoot me a message on any of those platforms. They're all connected together to book a charter. Like I said, I do walleye mostly, and then in the fall I'll do Lake Erie perch.
Okay.
Perch has been pretty good last couple years. But we can go. I think I was only out of my boat for a month last year, month and a half. So I'm pretty much open all year round. As long as there's no ice, we're fishing, because there's always walleye to be found somewhere.
That's great, man. You're going all out on the charter business too.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yep.
All right, Ryan. Well, thanks for your time tonight. And yeah, everybody go follow him, hit him up if you guys want to book a charter. And hey, best of luck in the future with, you know, your next endeavor and your competition.
Yeah. Thanks, Lee. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. I mean, there it is. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You're going to take that next step, push yourself to become better at your craft of whatever that is, and maybe it's fishing. And I think Ryan gave a great perspective there of, you know, what he had to do and what he had to overcome to take his tournament fishing to the next level. And him and Frenny did a hell of a job, and, you know, another congratulations to them on their recent ninth place finish on such a big stage. So it was kind of cool to see that story unfold and all the adversity that they faced and high winds and stuff like that during the tournament. Really cool to see and to get a perspective from, you know, someone who considers themselves still up and coming and, you know, young in the tournament fishing world on a big stage like the Michigan Walleye Tour. So thanks again for Ryan for coming on. Make sure you head on over, guys, to his social handles that he just mentioned, and also to check out his charter fishing business, Full Throttle Sport Fishing. So, and you know that, you know, I'm going to keep these episodes coming your guys' way, putting them out. And remember to follow me over on social on Instagram. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Give it a 5-star review if you think that it deserves one. And yeah, as always, thanks for listening.